Today, we're headed across the Pacific to the home of Squid Game, Blackpink, and Chan Ho Park. We're going to eat some bulgogi, drink some soju, and check out a few ball games. It's the KBO League in South Korea, this week on Ballpark Road Trip. This is Ballpark Road Trip. If you're listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're planning on visiting a ballpark sometime in the future. Well, you've come to the right place. Here on the show, we will be traveling around to each major league city, talking to locals who know their home ballparks inside and out. Annyeonghaseyo, and welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and I'm sure you are wondering why we are doing an episode on the KBO when we've only covered a little more than half of the current Major League ballparks. Well, as you know, if you've listened to other episodes, we are going in order of my own personal ballpark journey, which brings us to 2006. I was living in Orange County in Southern California, having just visited ballpark number 15, Petco Park in San Diego. I was 26, and I was having a quarter-life crisis. I had found myself in an office job, working in a cubicle, feeling the walls closing in on me as I wasted my good years with data entry. So, I did what anybody in that situation would do. I followed a girl I liked to South Korea. They had just built a new theme park in Korea called English Village, but it wasn't your normal theme park. It was an ESL theme park. ESL stands for English as a Second Language. So an ESL theme park is a place that you could go to learn English. But instead of rides, they have English classes. And instead of characters, they have foreigners. It was easily the most interesting job I've ever had. We were out in the country, in the town of Paju, 6 kilometers from North Korea. People would come daily to visit the theme park. They would get a passport as their ticket, and the ticket office was a fake immigration station. So sometimes we would be at the ticket office. We'd have to be at the immigration station, and a little nine-year-old boy would come up to us and give us their ticket, which was their passport, and we'd have to give them a little test. We'd say, all right, to enter English Village, let's see, let's look at here. What is your name? Where are you from? What is your favorite color? My favorite color is blue. All right, come on in. You've passed your immigration test. And then they would come in, they would look around, they would go to classes, and they would ask us for autographs. Sign, sign, sign. And so we would sign. And then they would actually, after getting an autograph, they would touch my arm and marvel at my arm hair. Oh, like King Kong. Yes. Thank you, Korean child. Just like King Kong. Anyways, well, so that was a lot of fun. We also lived in the theme park. The theme park had things like, you know, a bakery, a hospital, a post office, a police station, all fake places in this English village and staffed by us, the workers. So we would play the fake policeman or the fake baker. And in the police station, we would say, all right, was the suspect tall or short? They were tall. Great, you know, things like that. But we all lived there above all the stores in the little apartments. And it was great. On our off days, we would take the hour-long train into Seoul. And for me, that eventually meant checking out a Korean baseball game. Now, I could watch some baseball on TV. I would say that the MLB TV app at that point, you know, in 2006, was not really great for watching games back home, but I did listen to a lot of games on the radio. But I could watch some TV in Korea, mostly Rockies games and Indians games. Whomever Hyesop Choi was on, or whoever there was a Korean player, we'd get those games. With the time difference, there would usually be a night game on during lunch in the theme park's cafeteria. During my time there, Korean baseball really took off. In 2008, Korea won the gold medal for baseball, beating Japan in the gold medal game. They also came pretty close in 2009 in the WBC, so I was pretty excited to go to a KBO game while I was there. However, my off days that first year were on Wednesdays and Thursdays, so my options to see a game were limited to a weeknight game. We went to Jamsil Stadium in Seoul, home to two teams, the Doosan Bears and the LG Twins. The teams in Korea are named after their corporate sponsors rather than their home city. We checked out the LG Twins on a Wednesday night. You know, I can't say too much positive about the atmosphere, but remember, I was there on a Wednesday night in 2007, I think. We sat out in the bleachers where there were the most fans, but the stadium was pretty empty, maybe overall a couple thousand people. I'm sure more people would have been there on the weekend, later in the season, or in the postseason. I also remember it being a little misty while I was there, so maybe the weather wasn't being great. I also remember there being a 7-Eleven right outside the stadium to get your snacks, as well as what I recognized as traditional Korean street food. Like, it would be weird to me in the United States to go to a ballpark and have them have like a 7-Eleven or a Walgreens and just have normal snacks, but that's what you could do at the ballpark in Korea. Now, the KBO has modernized and become more globally recognizable, especially after COVID, and KBO games were the only ones we could watch on TV. ESPN broadcast them live. But a lot more people are interested now in going out to Korea, just like Japan, to go see some baseball. So I'm lucky enough to talk to Shane Barclay of Japan Ball about his experience taking groups to Korea for baseball games. Well, Shane, welcome to the show. This is Ballpark Road Trip. The reason I'm having you on, Shane, is because I want to talk about the KBO and Korean baseball. And the reason we're talking Korean baseball on this podcast is because this follows my ballpark journey. And I went to a KBO game when I lived in Korea for 3 years from 2006 to 2009. That was a while ago, but I do want to include Korean baseball. And I know that you have a company, your company, Japan Ball, obviously probably gets its name from doing Japan tours. When did you start doing Korean tours? When did you add Korea to your itineraries?
2 years ago. So this will be our third year in a row going to Korea. So 2023 is our first tour. And as you mentioned, yeah, Japan has kind of always been our focus. But I love baseball all over the world. And yeah, we go to countries way beyond Japan these days. And Korea is amazing. So I'm glad you've been, and I'm happy to talk about it today.
Well, good. I know a lot of people were introduced to Korean baseball probably during the pandemic, when that was what we were able to watch when games weren't happening over here. But for those who are interested in going over there, how easy is it to go and see baseball games? How about let's talk about on your own first. If you were just going on your own, How easy is it to go to see baseball games in Korea?
I would say harder than you would expect. You know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Jacob, you've been. I mean, you can definitely show up to a game and buy a ticket. That is, like, they don't typically sell out all their games. Depends time of year, depends weekend, rivalry games, all that stuff, of course, just as you would expect. Getting around in Korea on your own is not so easy if you don't speak the language or read the language. In your typical apps like Google Maps doesn't really help you in Korea. There's not a lot of signage in English. If you can manage to get to the ballpark, or if you're close enough to just take a taxi and, you know, have them take you directly there, then yeah, you can walk up and buy a ticket for the most part. I have found, compared to the other countries we go to, Korea is actually probably the hardest one to kind of do it on your own, which isn't to say that plenty of adventurous baseball fans don't manage to do it. It's, you know, Korea is a safe place, and there's good infrastructure there, and there's lots of teams to see. So it's not like an impossible task. But I have found that our local guides are probably more essential in Korea than anywhere else we visit.
Now, to be clear, I haven't been to Korea since 2009. So, whatever I know about Korea and Korean baseball has probably changed over the past 15 years or so. So, I'm gonna go with a lot of what you're telling me and your recommendations and your guides as being more up to date than what I know. But do you know how many teams there are in the KBO, or how many teams there are to
Yeah,
see?
there's 10 teams, 9 ballparks, two of them in Seoul share the same stadium, Jamsil Stadium, which is really kind of the main big city in, or big stadium in Seoul, but 10 teams total.
Would you say there's a place, let's say people weren't going to do a whole tour, but they wanted to see the most that they could. Is there one place that they could have as their home base that they may be able to take day trips or see multiple teams in that area?
Yeah, definitely. If you're in Seoul, there's 5 teams within the Seoul metropolitan area, which is actually the exact same as Tokyo. There's 5 teams in the Tokyo area, so you could go to Seoul, and there's only 4 ballparks but 5 teams, and you could see a bunch of different teams, a bunch of different types of ballparks. None of my favorite ballparks are outside of Seoul, but you could definitely get the Korean baseball experience. They're very accessible going to the main city there.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about ballparks, because when I lived there, I would say the ballpark game in South Korea was lacking. But since I've
Yes.
left, they have built some pretty interesting kind of structures. Is there anything that you would say is your favorite, or a place that you think people should see if they have to go to one stadium?
Yeah, I mean, travel aside, my favorite is the Samsung Lions. They're in Daegu, and they have a pretty new ballpark. I'm checking. I think I have a list here. Yeah, it was built in. I guess it's not as new as I thought, but anyway, it feels like a nice new ballpark. It's not just kind of a generic concrete symmetrical building. Got really good sight lines. The team has an amazing history. I'm not sure exactly. I got to look up when it was built, but I think it's pretty new. And I, for me, when we were traveling around the country last year, it was my first time getting to that ballpark, and that was the one where I walked in. I'm like, oh yeah, this is like architecturally, you know, not like a wonder of the world, but architecturally different, and it had a lot of character to it physically. All the stadiums in Korea have character as far as the fans bring, but I found in my travels around the world that no one has really caught on to the American trend of making the ballpark the attraction. Japan, that started a little bit. They have a beautiful new field in Hokkaido that I think is as good as any ballpark in the world. But really, traveling around the world, I find that the fan experience is way more energetic and interesting around the world than it is in America, but the ballparks are not.
They had a game in Korea. I believe it was a major league game recently, and they had it in a domed stadium. Do you know what dome stadium that is and where that would be located?
Yeah, so that's out, it's basically in Seoul. That is the Gocheok Sky Dome. I think it was
Right.
built in, it's probably like 10, 15 years old or so now. The Kiwoom Heroes play their home games there. It's nice that it's domed because Korea in the summer is really hot. Also, they have a pretty intense rainy season. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that they built that really for the purpose of being able to host big events like the World Baseball Classic. I mean, they held MLB opening day there last year, so it's been effective in that it's a ballpark in Seoul, easy to get to, well, relatively. I mean, it's actually not that easy to get to, but it's in Seoul. having a dome stadium, if you're trying to host these big events, is such a major advantage in the bidding process. So it's honestly not, it looks kind of cool from the outside, I guess, but it's in the neighborhood it's in is fun. Like I last time I walked around the neighborhood a good amount, and it was it's nice in that sense. It's kind of a generic dome, to be honest. So it's one thing I do like about it is I'm pretty sure it's the smallest capacity ballpark in the whole KBO, which is kind of weird that they built a ballpark that's so small when they're trying to host these big events. But my guess is that, in if you're building in Seoul within the modern, in any time in the last many handful of decades, it's not a lot of room to work with, and they just needed a place where they could get it done. This is all just speculation, but I think that probably has to do with it, and I like that. I think a lot of baseball, purists like the small, intimate setting, and that's definitely the case in the Sky Dome.
What about transportation? You guys probably would take, do you guys usually take like a shuttle or some kind of, do you guys usually have some kind of coach for your tours? I assume that they're all pretty accessible by the metro.
Yeah, so within Seoul, we definitely pretty much exclusively take public transportation. Sometimes, like post game, we may take reserve taxis or reserve a little shuttle just if it's a long journey and a late night. So, in general, public transportation is really good in Korea. You could pinpoint your exact destination if you're willing to use combinations of subways, trains, and buses. Like I said before, it's not necessarily easy to navigate. There's not a whole lot in English, and you have to use the right navigation apps in order to do so. So on our tours, same with Japan, like I'm a big fan of public transportation. When you have such a good system, I think it's a great way to do experience the local culture. It's also a great way to keep the cost down, because I want to make my tours as accessible as possible. So we try to do that whenever we can. Once you're going between cities, we do a combination of, like, they have their version of the bullet train. Sometimes we'll rent a bus with a private driver. Kind of depends on the destination. But taking the bus or the train or subway to a game, I think is really part of the experience if you're trying to get the full immersive cultural baseball cultural experience. You're riding in the train and everyone's got their jerseys on and you're kind of with the flow of the people into the ballpark. And I, for me, that's my preferred way to go about it.
Now, when I lived in Korea, I would go to the movies, and I remember the movie theaters would stink because instead of popcorn, or along with popcorn, Koreans enjoyed another snack, which was dried squid. How did you feel about the food options at Korean baseball games?
Well, I personally absolutely love it. I'm half Chinese, and I grew up eating food that a lot of my friends would consider to be very weird. And a lot of our guests also consider some of the food you see at a Korean ballpark to be weird. The scene of walking up and seeing a stand, like with this old grandma cooking, like slow smoking squid and octopus and all sorts of unrecognizable things, is makes for quite a visual that I think a lot of people might be a little scared of. But then also someone like me gets very excited about it. I thought you were going to say cigarettes, because I feel like mayby when you were there, cigarettes were everywhere. That
They
fort,
were
I'm
weren't
happy to
in movie
report.
theaters, but they were most places. Most Korean barbecues, you'd be doing your barbecue, drinking and smoking while you're eating.
Fortunately, that's no longer the case. There's definitely a smoking culture, but it's no longer wherever you want, which I appreciate. The funky smells of like fermented foods and dried fish is definitely pervasive. The ballpark food for me is it's fun because it's different. Kind of similar to whereas in America, they're trying to make the ballpark itself an attraction and they're bringing in all these like interesting food stuff, and that hasn't caught on elsewhere. I think it's the same in Korea as well, where they're not like getting it's kind of it's basic stuff by their standards, which is interesting when it's for us, it's not basic at all, but like their equivalent of a a hot dog or hamburgers, like a boiled rice cake in chili sauce, and maybe a shrimp, like a fried shrimp, deep fried shrimp in a hot dog bun, which like to me is really fun. And it is, but it's not like, for me, I love, love, love Korean food. And most of that I'm trying to get outside the ballpark, is the ballpark is not trying to make, it's just like functional food for the locals. They're not trying to make the food an attraction. So I try to fill up before and after the games. Not that there's anything wrong with the food in the ballpark, but it's the one thing I definitely appreciate though is that they're not trying to gouge you with the pricing once you're inside. And actually, what I learned, it took me a while to realize this until our tour guides were explaining how outside the Sky Dome, actually, there's a famous fried chicken place that like everyone loves. And so they're explaining this, and I was like, oh, so I guess, yeah, should we make a stop there on the way, before going in? They're like, oh no, we'll just order delivery to the ballpark. And I was like, wait, what? And they said, yeah, we just order it on our phone, and then there's like a gate that's for food deliveries that you can kind of, it's kind of like a, you can step out kind of like where a smoking section would be, and you can step out and pick up your delivery. And I, once you pointed out, I realized, oh yeah, there's tons of these delivery guys coming and bringing food to the people in the stadium. And that's indicative of, like, in America, you're just getting gouged left and right, because they know, they check your bags to make sure you're not bringing in outside food and drink, and then they charge you $9 for a water. And like, it's crazy, beer's like $19. And then in Korea, that like ruthless pricing doesn't exist. You can just get whatever you want. You can bring it inside the ballpark. You can have it delivered to you at the ballpark, or you can buy food inside, and it's going to be very, maybe a little bit more than it is outside, but it's not crazy or ridiculous.
That's such a great idea. I wish you could do that at ballparks in the US.
Right? Yeah.
But you said that maybe they do allow you to bring in your own food if you want, if you wanted to make sure that you had snacks that you, as like an American, could trust and were safe for your palate. You could go to like a 7-Eleven or an E-Mart or something like that, or a Family Mart, and get the snacks that you like and bring them in.
Yes, I think that it would probably control drinks. I'm not sure exactly what their policy is. But yeah, you can definitely bring in food.
Right. So I went to Korea before I went to Japan, but you did Japan ball before Korea. So tell me a little bit, compare the fandom of Japanese fans and Korean fans. Is it similar? Is it different? Do you find that the bleachers are filled with people singing and chanting? What's different about Korean fans and Japanese fans that you found?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because going into it, just in hearing about what Korean fans were like, and kind of just knowing peripherally, kind of like hearing about people have been, and just kind of knowing what Asian cheer culture is, I thought it was going to be basically the same thing. And at first glance, or for someone who's never been, maybe it's just kind of going to their first game at either of those, in either of those countries, it would appear to be pretty similar. But actually, the more I spent time in Korea, the more I realized it's actually very different. They're similar if you're comparing it to an American scene, but not similar if you're comparing them to each other. So, generally speaking, the difference between Asian cheer culture and American cheer culture is that in America, you're kind of hanging out, you're talking, you're having a beer, it's casual, you cheer when things happen. If the team is out of it, whether in the game or in the standings, it's still a great time to kind of have a nice day at the ballpark. In Japan and Korea, that's definitely not the case. In Japan and Korea, first of all, it doesn't matter the score, doesn't matter the standings. You're there to cheer 9 innings, 27 outs, and it's intense. It's choreographed. It's practiced. Like, literally, the fans are practicing these cheers at home, like with YouTube videos. So they show up and they already know them. So that's generally speaking, like kind of comparing the Japan and Korea to the US. Comparing Japan and Korea to each other, I'd say there's a few really distinct differences. So first of all, in Japan, the Oendan, which is the cheering section, is typically one group in the bleachers. that's really the one. They're the ones who are standing the whole game, or at least standing the whole time their team's hitting and singing. And there's like some light choreography, like maybe some clapping, but it's mostly singing and cheering in unison. And there's pre-programmed, whether it's the player or what happens in the game, there's certain things that you'll sing. Whereas in Korea, it's mostly the whole half of the stadium, and the leaders of the cheers are standing on the dugout, and they're really presenting to basically the whole half of the stadium. And I say half because for example, in Seoul, where the fans can travel to the away games, it'll be like a 50-50 divide lots of times. And they'll accommodate the visiting team's cheer section where they have a PA system, they have a platform. It's actually technically not really on a dugout usually. It's a kind of stage in the stands. And it's just an accepted thing that when your team is hitting, then you are cheering. And then when your team is not hitting, that's when you take your break and you sit down, and the other team's fans will be cheering. Of course, depending on the geography, maybe the other team's side isn't as filled up, but it's really kind of like the whole stadium. In Japan, the whole stadium will participate, but they're not really like part of the like cheering section as intense, unless you like buy a ticket in the cheering section. So that's a pretty big difference. As far as in Korea, it's like the whole stadium basically is getting into it. The other major difference that is one that is quite noticeable the first time you go is that in Korea, the crowd is overwhelmingly female and young, like 20 to like young to mid 20s females. And that's like, it's shocking actually when you first see it, because it's just, you're not used to seeing that and you would just never guess that. And our guests have, and I have had a good time kind of trying to figure out exactly why this phenomenon has happened. I don't know, when you were there, Jacob, was it like that? I think it's a kind of recent thing. I'm not sure.
Possibly. I mean, there's always been like a boy band kind of culture, and there's always been a Korean girl fandom culture. And so I wonder if for some reason this kind of male celebrity has gotten into popularity, this kind of, especially a baseball player specifically.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. Like a kind of like a fangirl approach. Like you're treating the baseball players like pop stars, and you see it like at the merch stands. It's like it's a lot of the players' faces on things. You know, it's like who's your favorite player is like, you know, it's his face, and they treat him like they're a K-pop star. That's definitely a big part of it. There's no denying it. We started asking some of the our local guides had some friends who would join us. Some of them are female, and they weren't necessarily like in the stands doing all the dancing, but they were definitely a credible source. And we were trying, and they are a little bit offended, saying like, oh, you just like, think these are like, you know, you have crushes like on a boy band, you know, player. They didn't deny that there's definitely an element to that, but they said they think it's just become a fun activity for your friends. And like they're like, this is a place where you can go, you can have some beers, you can sing, you can dance. You know, like, it's a very communal thing. It's accessible. It's like innocent, like good, clean fun. And it's just become a fun thing to do with your friends. And I should say another big difference between Korea and Japan is that there's much more choreography in Korea than Japan, like with the hand motions. It's like you're doing like, it's not just clapping. It's like choreography of you're like pointing and you're kind of doing things rhythmically, and so it's this really fun like dance like scene. And so it's fun, and you can kind of tell by like their reaction to like a fly ball that they're not necessarily the most well-versed fans. It's like, you know, they cheer at mostly the right times, but they're also prompted by the cheers. And it's like they're not there because they're super hardcore baseball fans. I think they're not there just because they like have a crush on all the players and think he's cute. Like I don't think that like it's either of those extremes. I think it's just become a fun thing to do that like, there's a 25,000 seat stadium. It's accessible. It's not that expensive. You have a couple of drinks and hang out with your girlfriend. So anyway, that's a huge difference in it, and I love it. It's like it really makes for a good energy in the crowd.
That's great. Yeah. And Korea is absolutely a place for kind of wholesome fun. I was planning a trip for a group of high school girls, and I thought, man, this is Korea's the perfect country for high school girls because it's all things like, Noribong, like the karaoke and singing and going to juice bars and bubble tea and now baseball games and all kinds of fun things that don't involve getting in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. Yep. And lots of like cutesy culture, like that's big. And so yeah, it all kind of plays into the baseball lends itself to it with all their like they love their stuffed animals and little keychains and all the little cutesy things that the fans just eat it up.
Now, have you gone at different times of the year?
So I've only been later in the season where it's kind of a similar story. The attendance definitely spikes. I mean, it's I think like May into June is when it is the most popular, because it gets so hot later. But I mean, it's the games are not like selling out except for in like kind of really peak games or part of the season. I think it's probably more popular now because of the what we're just talking about with all the young females being really into it. But to be honest, I think that if you're there in May, that is kind of the peak time. When I was going in like August last year, we were there in August, and it's just so freaking hot where it tends to keep people away a little bit. So yeah, it's I think that a lot of the games we went to were not very close to selling out. But if we went to a weekend game or a rivalry game, then we had like maybe last year we had one sellout out of like seven games or something like that.
For people who are interested in going to Korea and maybe they don't want to go on their own, they do want to go with a tour. Tell me a little bit about what a Korean tour with Japan Ball looks like.
Yeah, so the goal of our tours, all of our tours, is to experience a new culture through baseball. So it's definitely baseball centric. We do a lot of baseball games. But we also really want our guests to get a taste of the culture outside the field, whether that's historical stuff, just cool sightseeing opportunities, definitely the food and drink, because that's how I like to travel, is I eat my way through a country. So we definitely need a
Absolutely.
lot of that. So it's we definitely are on the move a lot because we try to go to as many games as possible. But we also will break up all of our tours into different segments. So for example, in this year in Korea, we basically have the first segment, which is only Seoul, and that you can keep your base in one hotel, smoking out from there, hitting all the ballparks in the Seoul area, and also getting hitting some of the key sightseeing places and some of the lesser known ones that our local guides take us to. And so we'll do a game on most days, but like maybe every 2 or 3 or 4 days, then we have an off day where we can just do sightseeing or maybe a travel day. Because once we leave Seoul for the second half of the tour, then the stadiums are much more spread out. There's really only a couple stadiums that are close enough where you could go to both of them with staying in the same hotel. So we're definitely bouncing around. So well, how we try to do it is we'll leave in the morning, hopefully have a little bit of local sightseeing time on the way. Like we strategically will stop somewhere on the way to maybe break up the drive or the train ride, and then go to the game at night. Or we'll get to the ballpark and then have time to do some local sightseeing in the morning. Oftentimes we'll make the local sightseeing optional just in case, it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of baseball. I think there's pitch clock this year in Korea. I'm hoping so. but some of the games can get pretty long. So So we like to build in flexibility, build in freedom. If you want to do some exploration on your own, you're certainly welcome to. I try to avoid the whole like follow the leader who's holding an umbrella thing. Like there obviously has to be an element of that because we are a tour group. But I also want it to feel like you're learning how to do things the local way, and you're kind of getting like a, you know, obviously it is a quick trip and we're bouncing around. So it's not like you're, you know, setting up shop, but I want you to feel like you are really getting a feel for what the city is like that we're in. And you know, we're going to stop at like a green tea field to like learn about, you know, get some nice nature and like kind of learn about the tea culture in Korea. And then we hit like a historic temple that's built into the side of a mountain. And some of these are really popular tourist places, and some of them are not at all, but they're really neat places that we think that would like add to a diverse experience. So baseball is our guiding light. You know, it's like, okay, we got a game here tomorrow, so we're going to go that way, and we're definitely going to make sure we're to the game plenty early, and we have good seats. Or if there's like different like hospitality options in the ballpark, like for example, on one game, our guides will rent us the barbecue area. And the barbecue area means you bring all your own meat and food, and you cook on their barbecues and have a Korean barbecue at the
Oh,
ballpark. So
fun.
like
Oh, that's
we
great.
try to do cool stuff like that. And you can buy VIP like behind home plate tickets and drinks included for a very reasonable price compared to America. So like we try to mix in some of those. So yeah, we make sure we get some of those cool experiences and also some experiences where you're like in the thick of the cheering section, getting that experience. So we really want you to feel like you're getting a taste of everything the baseball scene has to offer and everything, as much as we can without going too intense with the scheduling outside the ballpark too.
And they can look more information, what, japanball.com?
Oh
Is that
yeah.
your
Yeah,
website?
so japanball.com is our website. There's info there on all of our tours. We have tours to Korea, Dominican Republic, Europe, Alaska Midnight Sun Game, and of course Japan. We have a lot of coverage on Japanese baseball. We're actually I haven't really announced it yet, but just a little sneak peek. We're actually launching a new brand in addition to Japanball that all of our travel operations are going to fall under because we've expanded so much where you know, having to explain like, okay, we're a bunch of Americans under the name Japanball and we're going to Korea. It's like, okay, wait,
Yeah.
why is that? I don't really get it, you know? And Japanball has been around for 25 years and we have a great community. So like I didn't want to mess with that, and I'm fine doing it as is, but I think I've got to the point where it's a little bit I feel like I have to explain myself a lot. So anyway, that's
You need
coming
an
soon.
alphabet
And
to your Google.
yeah, exactly. A different umbrella. You know, have the umbrella company. So anyway, japanball.com for now. We have social media on all the normal channels. We have a newsletter that you can sign up for. And if you sign up for that, you'll get info about Japanese baseball, and then you can also get in, and you'll also get info about our tours. So yeah, I'd love to. Anyone following you is definitely our type of person. Like, I'll say the last thing about our tours, as far as what you experience, is you're traveling with a bunch of people who are just like you, in that you have two things in common: you love baseball, and you have a sense of adventure, a curiosity that makes you want to travel to see it. And you can talk baseball all day long and have this like shared experience that is super unique. And a lot of people find our tours and join our tours because they just need help with the logistics, as they want to see baseball in another country. But they keep coming back because the camaraderie you have with fellow tour guests. And that's really, for me, my favorite part.
Awesome. Well, Shane Barkley, thank you very much for joining us. It was great talking to you about this, and I'm going to be talking to one of your colleagues next week about Japan.
Cool. Thanks, Jacob.
All right. So I have heard from a bunch of people that they'd be interested in visiting South Korea for a game, but they're a little nervous about getting around and navigating in a country that doesn't speak English. Now, it is true that not everyone speaks English, but Korea as a country understands the importance of English for both business and travel. So you will find a lot of people working in public spaces who might speak a little English. If not, then their manager probably does. But I do have some tips for a good Korean trip. Number one, rent a portable Wi-Fi device at the airport so you can have Wi-Fi anywhere you go, even on the streets, because you might be looking up things on your phone, maybe translations, all kinds of things that you might need out and about. But portable Wi-Fi is something that's very popular in Japan and Korea that you can get at the airport. So that just goes into your backpack, and then you'll have Wi-Fi wherever you go. Number two, don't be afraid of the subways. The maps are big, but color-coded, and you can find your way around. Trains come all the time. You might have to transfer a couple times, but it's pretty easy. I also recommend using the train if you're going to get out of Seoul and are traveling in other parts of the country. You can use the KTX, which is like their bullet train. Get it from Seoul Station or Yongsan Station, but that will take you down to Busan and other places as well. Number three, don't rely on Google Maps. It doesn't work. We are too close to North Korea for Google satellites to get information. So instead, Korea has its own Google, Naver, and you can download the Naver Maps app. And I believe there's a good translation there, so you can see it in English. Number four, it's okay to stay in an American chain. Now, you may say, oh, yeah. Of course it's okay to stay in an American chain. Where else would I stay? Well, I look online, and there are cheaper options, including business hotels. And if you felt more comfortable, that's what I recommend. They're pretty clean, and they're a lot cheaper. But if you stay at a famous worldwide brand, even if it's like something something by Marriott or something something by Hyatt, you know, chances are you will have some English staff there to help you, or English-speaking staff. They will still be Koreans, but they will be English-speaking, which is good because number five is eat. Go out for Korean barbecue. And you know what I did the last time that I was in Korea? I asked the English-speaking woman at the front desk, who was like in her 20s, I said, hey, where do you and the staff go out for Korean barbecue when you get off work? And she told me a place that was really close. And that's great because Korean barbecue is a communal experience. It's also often a drinking experience. So late night Korean barbecue is great, whether you're getting bulgogi or you're getting galbi, which is like ribs, or you're getting samgyeopsal, which is like pork belly. It's all great. You can also go and get yourself Korean fried chicken and beer. That might be a little safer if you don't know what you're ordering. But, you know, all of the meat restaurants do have pictures as well. But, yeah, there's always Korean fried chicken and beer. And it's very obvious because most of the signs have beer and fried chicken on it. So a quick note about food. If it's red, it's probably very spicy. Number six. Go to a Jimjilbang. A Jimjilbang is the public bath in Korea. There are plenty of them all around. There's small ones and big ones. I'll recommend one later and put it in the show notes. But a Jimjilbang is great. So much fun. They have a big, huge bath and hot tub culture in Korea. So, yes, you start by going to your separate changing rooms, one for male, one for female. That's where you have to be naked, but they do showers and hot tubs and cold plunge pools and saunas and steam rooms. And then when you're all done with that, they give you some clothes, some either like blue or orange or pink little matching shorts and shirt. And that's where you can go into the common areas and hang out with people from the opposite sex. You can go to little cafes and get food and lunch. They have common rooms where there's usually TV on, maybe even a baseball game. Sleeping areas, places where you can take a nap. More saunas and hot rooms where you can go in your clothes and sweat with your friends. So Jimjil Bongs are really cool places. You probably have seen them if you watch K-dramas. K-dramas are, kind of Korean soap operas. But yeah, don't be scared. Go to a Jimjil Bong. In fact, let me just tell you right now, I'm going to recommend SpaRex, SpaRex. I'm not saying it's the best, the most famous, but it's really good for what you want from a Jimjil Bong. And it's right across the street from a famous tourist spot called the Dongdaemun Design Plaza. That's a really cool place that you can check out and take some pictures. And then go over to SpaRex, SpaRex. So check that out when you're there. Finally, number 7. Get yourself in the mood with some Korean entertainment. Listen to Blackpink, binge a K-drama on Netflix, or watch a Bong Joon-ho movie. I recommend Parasite or The Host. But yeah, get yourself all psyched and ready for Korea, and then you'll be super excited when you land at the airport and you see that big wall-sized picture of Blackpink or BTS in front of you. Then you'll feel like you've made it. I'm sure there are plenty more tips to cover, but those are what come to mind first. I loved living in Korea for those 3 years. What I really liked about living in Korea, though, was how close it was to other Asian countries. You know, every time you fly to Asia, it's going to be like a $2,000 14 to 17 hour flight, but when you're already in Asia, it's an hour and a half to Beijing, a couple hours to Hong Kong, an hour to 2 hours to Japan, 5 hours to Thailand, and that means that you can really travel to all these different countries on your days off. Now, that meant for me that in 2008, I was able to go to Japan to see the Oakland A's and the Boston Red Sox play. But we'll talk about that in our next episode. Thanks for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. Until then, this is Jacob Russell Snyder saying, thanks for listening to Ballpark Road Trip.
Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.